All right, sweet.
Boom. Testing one, testing two, testing red, testing blue. Yeah, I look good. Let me see if I sit back a little. Good. Awesome. That sounds good. Alan, give me a test or two.
I like toast.
What do you like on your toast?
I'm a pretty simple guy. I like jelly and butter. That's about it.
What's your favorite jelly?
I'm torn between strawberry and grape, personally. I do enjoy the occasional honey marmalade, though.
I like it all. You really can't go wrong with me. And with that, kids, welcome to SmaffCast, episode 25 this will be. And I know that for sure because I uploaded episode 24 today. So if you haven't listened to that yet, boom, baby, go over and listen anywhere you get your podcasts served to you. The Saber Martial Arts podcast is available. And now that includes YouTube as well. Starting with last Tuesday's, well, actually, it got released today, but we recorded last Tuesday. Starting with last Tuesday's episode, we are going to try to get all of these audio files up on YouTube as well. So, you know, some of them may have video attached with them, but for the most part, at least the audio versions, if you don't consume podcasts via outside apps like Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Podbay or anything like that, then go on to YouTube. Everybody goes on YouTube and you'll be able to find any SmaffCast episode from here on out, hopefully, fingers crossed, making sure everything gets uploaded appropriately, should be available on the YouTube channel as well. There's a podcasts tab where you can find them, as well as a under the playlist tab. They start their own playlist automatically when they're a podcast. So you really have no excuse not to listen to SmaffCast now. The only excuse is you're too much of a nerd for a nerd show. But this is a pretty nerdy show, so if you're that big of a nerd, it's still not an excuse. Alan, how are you? How's it been over the last week or so?
I'm doing all right. Staying busy, doing a lot of different projects. So, yeah.
What's the martial flavor of the week for you? Anything in particular? Anything different than what we talked about last week? Anything in addition?
Not really. Just kind of refinement. So, you much like a sculptor, first you get the shape, and then you get the detail. Mm-hmm. And then you get the fine-tuning detail and mm-hmm. so on until you actually have something that you hopefully are proud of. That's kind of where this whole thing goes. And because I only do it really once a week, it's not really the daily grind that I used to have.
Right,
so
right.
It's a much more embrace the process kind of thing.
A lot more what you probably want to do anyway, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's why you have other projects to work on.
Last week, for anybody who didn't hear it yet, first of all, hit pause, go back, listen to last week's episode. But we talked a lot about Alan. Alan was doing some rope dart. And what's the...
Meteor hammer.
Meteor hammer. I was thinking hammer. Yeah. Which is another form of rope dart, right? And very, very interesting conversation. And if you're thinking, well, what the hell does that have to do with lightsabers? Go back and listen. It was a fun conversation. And as far as like talking about refinement, things like that, we talked a lot about traditional weaponry, in particular the flexible weapons last week. So if nunchucks or, you know, rope darts, things like that, that's something you're interested in at all, we dabbled in that, and we'll probably dabble in that in the future, especially as we talk about forms like Ataru more, forms like Sarasu more, And depending on your flavor of pronunciation, I prefer Niman, but you know, there's the old Nyman as well, form six. Right. Those particular forms,
that's,
I feel like,
the problem with made up words.
Yeah, right.
That you never actually hear. Actually, all conjecture.
Yeah. Oh man, yes, George Lucas, he'll still call it a laser sword, right? So it is what it is.
Right.
But I feel like as we talk about those particular lightsaber forms, the flexible weapon talk will come up again, because a lot of the footwork and certainly some of the more dangerous blade manipulation can be paralleled with some of those weapons. So anyway, I guess I'll give you an update on my week in martial arts. I've been talking a lot about kind of opening up a little bit with like combos and things. Mostly MMA teaching, but really trying to get people to focus on, it's not boxing and then kicking and then wrestling and then grappling and then clinching. It's punching with kicking, with wrestling, with grappling, with clinching, with elbows, with knees, with, right? It's all the stuff at once. And how do you get that not to be overwhelming for you? To the point where you can be comfortable. Like, the way I kind of explained it tonight to a student, she's not a beginner, but she's not really advanced either. And she's not young. She's in her 40s. And physically, I would say she's not in American Gladiator's shape, but she is really, really sharp in terms of her eye for technique and making herself better. So she's really good. Like when I tell people about her, I tell her she's good first. And so what she's been working on is exactly that, because she was saying tonight, oh, I feel like I go in and then I punch. And then I come out, and then I go in, and then I kick, and then I come out, and then maybe somebody comes in for a takedown, so then I have to go into the underhook mode and worrying about hips and this and that. And I was like, yeah, no, you have to start putting a little spackle into those seams, putting a little bit of grout in there, and smoothing out those edges, because it can't be one, then the other, then the other. It has to be one with another, with another, with another. And it's a subtle mm-hmm. difference in language, but it's a huge difference in practice. Right. But it's tough. It's not easy. Even for advanced people, that's really a tough concept to start putting into actual physical action.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Any thoughts on that, Alan? Yeah. Like, especially as it relates to sabers, because I feel like a lot of times with competition saber combat, it's like,
yeah,
run in, hit, run out. We've talked about this ad nauseum. Run out, run in, hit, run out, run in, hit, run. Like, you might get two, maybe three strikes in before you call a break or whatever. And that's the way a lot of people practice, which is fine, because you're trying to treat it like a real lightsaber. So if you get hit once, that thing is gone, right? But there is a little bit of nuance. There is a little bit of ability, especially as you have like two skilled combatants, to kind of to have a little flavor, to have more striking and parrying and reposting and stuff going on. So I don't know. You want to jump on this a little bit?
Sure. Well, first off, in any martial art, you don't learn the whole thing all at once.
That's a good way to start this. I'm intrigued now.
The biggest thing that people, the product of popular culture is that all you need is a montage, and then all of a sudden you can win the tournament, right? But it really does take dedication, and it does take consistency, and it does take small adjustments, right?
Yeah, so, small adjustments. I like that.
I'm going to talk in a bunch of different parables here, and I'm probably going to mix metaphors. But first off, big ships turn slow. You know, if you've lived, you know, if you just started this and you're, let's say, 8 years old, for the first 8 years of your life, you were not doing martial arts. Until you get enough years in martial art to your life, then you probably, when you started, then you probably shouldn't take it too seriously.
That's so, a good point. I mean, hadn't thought about that.
You started, if you started at eight, you know, let's say you're 9 years old, you're 1 year in, but you're, you know, you had 8 years out. So yeah. it's a little bit of, I mean, you're looking at being able to suck at something first in order to get good at it. And that's just the name of the game.
But if you're 19, skill, whether it's, let's jump on this. Let's say you started at 18, sure. Now you're 19. That's still 1 year in, but 18 years out. So right. Now your proportion is just... So, and this is mostly, although kids love lightsabers, this particular activity is mostly adults.
Correct.
So most adults have been, we're talking like 30 years out, 1 year in, 40 years out, 1 year in, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So this is an interesting take you've got going here.
Well, that's the mindset, right? So let's start with, what does it take to show up?
Yeah.
You know, and what does it take to keep coming back? And it's the mindset of that, hey, you know what? I'm not an expert at this.
And it's okay to be a beginner, or it's okay not to be an expert. Yeah,
exactly. And so see yourself as, you know, the amount of years of experience you have in it, and it'll be a little bit easier to swallow that pill, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that in any martial art or any skill, anything that you want to get good at, again, the metaphor is you don't eat a whole cow for breakfast. You have to eat small bites, and you have to actually, you know, chew the food and digest it. It's not one of those things, again, that will just be jacked into your brain like the Matrix. Mm-hmm. It's something that does take a little bit of time, effort, and energy in order to get good at. Now, some people might be, you know, better at it than others because they have other experience.
Sure.
That they might have other experience that is basically conducive to learning what the lesson is.
Physically relevant or mentally relevant to martial arts in
general. For example, if lightsaber is your first martial art, then of course everything is new and exciting and at times difficult. But if it's, you know, your third or fourth martial art, you know, you've done open hand taekwondo when you were a kid. You've done some bow staff training before with your brother in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've actually held a weapon before and brandished it before you like a sword and actually started to understand technique versus just swinging it freestyle.
You know, that...
Not that there's anything... Yeah.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought. I'll remember.
Sure. Not that there's anything wrong with going freestyle. It's actually encouraged once you're comfortable with it, but understand the difference between form and function.
Yeah. So what I was going to jump off was you said understanding technique, and just at the end there, you said understanding form and function. So these are three things that I had one particular teacher who really just drilled these three things into us, because his whole thing was, I have to pay attention to technique. I have to pay attention to these things because I'm not very naturally athletic. I'm not very naturally reflexively fast. I'm not hyper strong for my size, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, so I don't have those like Olympic attributes or whatever the case may be. I'm not the college football jock. I have to pay attention to all the other details to make up for what I'm lacking in just raw ability, natural ability.
Exactly.
And I thought that was like very, because for me, I'm kind of the opposite of your initial example. I am only 4 years out of this game, 30, almost 2 years in. And it's like, for me, I don't remember what it was like to be a beginner. So I kind of always have approached things like I don't know what's going on. And it's allowed me to just like soak up all this information over time, because that's just the way I've always been. I've never known anything else since I was four. So my mind is trained to come into things like a dry sponge. And I think the whole technique thing is kind of what got me to translate this concept to my student tonight, who is, like I said, older. She's, you know, 40 years out, 3 years in. And so for her, she understands, she's also a school teacher. So she understands like what technique means, what getting the rudiments down means. And for her, it's that frustration of, so I have these rudiments now. I know what to do. How come I can't put this combo together the way I want? Or how come I can't just do things seamlessly? And I was like, well, okay, so like you're a musician too. You had to learn the notes. Then you had to learn the scales. Then you could learn some songs and chord progressions. Then you could learn to improvise later, right? Like you couldn't just jump out of the gate and start playing with Count Basie and his orchestra. You had to learn the notes first. And I was like, so that's like, to you being here 3 years feels like, man, I've been here a long time, but 3 years really isn't. That's a great amount of time, but it's not a lot. And anybody who can keep something up for 3 years, trust me, you can keep it up for 30 years, but to keep it up for 3 years at all, that's already a lot more than a lot of people can do. Long and short of it is, telling somebody like that, who some of her physical limitations, you know, a little bit of weight, but also just her height and things, you know, it, just a lot of physical limitations. But when she focuses on technique, when she focuses on like little things, like she said, okay, I noticed that I don't get hit so much when I focus on the opponent's chest. Like you told us to focus on their chest, but when I actually focus on it, it's like I get hit so much less. There you go. You might know the information, but it took you how many months since I said that the last time to actually put it into action? And that's okay. It's okay to come into things when it's time for you to come into things. It's a tough concept. I've been juggling a lot with it lately because I have a few students from kind of all over the spectrum, skill-wise and experience-wise. So, and they're all sparring together. You know what I mean? So when you're throwing punches and kicks all in the same room together, but you're not all the same level, it makes things interesting. And that's the way saber fighting is all over the world, honestly, at this point, because what you have is people like you and me with extensive martial arts backgrounds, and you have people who just do it because they like Star Wars and lightsabers, and maybe they wanted to get involved in a martial art or used to be and want to do it. All of these people are valuable, and kind of understanding where you fit into the whole thing, it comes with time. But anyway, I think we're kind of rambling, but this is healthy rambling. This is kind of where I wanted to go tonight. So let's talk a little bit about we'll kind of take this car off of this freeway and maybe drive a different one. Let's talk about how lightsaber maybe could be an easier medium to understand this concept of like learning to flow with the basics, learning to become more like style or artistic even with your basic knowledge, or if you're more advanced, just trying to take all the crap you know in your head and make your body do it on command without having to think about it. I personally think the lightsaber is maybe the best martial art outside of learning like how to really become a good kickboxer or something like that where your whole body's involved. Because the lightsaber has that whole 360 degree blade thing. And we talk about that ad nauseum too, but that's a really big advantage if you're trying to understand motion, to be able to go one way and then to go exactly the opposite way and have the same effect. What I mean is, if I cut from a shoulder down to a hip in a forward motion, and then I cut backwards with the quote-unquote spine of the blade from the hip back to the shoulder, it does the same thing. It cuts exactly the same way. Whereas if you were to do that with a katana, obviously, there's an edge on one side, there's a spine on the other. Or if you were to do that with a longsword, you've only got two to choose from. You couldn't do that with the side of the blade and make... So that becomes very interesting because you can kind of, I don't want to say slop your technique, but you can adjust your technique to become something that wouldn't be lethal with another weapon would be lethal with a lightsaber. If that makes I don't know where I'm kind of, I know where I'm going with this. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly or clearly.
All right. There is a couple of different things you can go with, as far as an example that, you can use in order to, teach the basics of lightsabers. So the first thing is, if you treat a lightsaber as what you've seen in the movies and in the media that you've absorbed, then it becomes a little bit easier to teach as long as you have the same basis of reference, right? So if I start talking about some obscure Legends comic, then my student probably does not have the same amount of, I guess, reference for that, right?
Yes.
But if I talk about, hey, remember in A New Hope when Luke is just blocking side to side? This is what he's doing.
Yes.
The analogy works a little bit better that way. Whenever people start to get really heady with stuff, it seems to take away from what's actually happening. What I like to tell people is, like, if I'm actually doing my lightsaber form, if I do switch out my weapon into another sword, I should be able to figure it out, right? You are talking about something that is representative of a 360-degree blade. Yeah, but there are still movements with it that you can use from longsword, from katana, from foil, epee, saber.
Yeah.
All things. And the beauty of it is the fact that you can use it as any type of weapon, depending on the length of the saber, the length of the hilt, right? So if you are teaching lightsabers, if you are listening to this podcast, if you are a martial arts teacher, you know, that wants to get a little bit, you know, fun and involved, it is that. It's all those things that you need to teach and keep somebody inspired or just even aspire to whatever your next lesson will be.
Yeah.
Because then they have something to reference to.
Yeah.
So if I'm like, hey, tomorrow we're going to learn Suresu. Some of you might know that that's Obi-Wan Kenobi style. So we're going to be doing a lot of deflections. We're going to be doing a lot of blocks.
Right.
We're going to do a lot of defense. And then people will go, oh, I know Obi-Wan Kenobi. Oh, yeah, he was in Clone Wars. Oh, yeah, he does do a lot of defense. So you have a little bit more reference material to actually teach. So, like, the Chinese martial arts, open hand, there's a lot of movements that are based on how animals move.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whenever people don't know what that animal is, it's hard to teach them what that animal is, right? So if I go, hey,
I know what you mean.
we're doing monkey style kung fu. Some people go, what kind of monkey? And some other people go, I've never seen a monkey do anything but sit there and eat a banana.
Right. You know, and some people, like, okay, a gorilla is the same thing as a monkey.
Right. So it's a little bit different. And it's hard to actually say. That's why a lot of the Chinese martial arts have phrases or poetry to them. So that you can understand, oh, this is the intention of this idea.
Right.
For example, in Tai Chi, there is a series of techniques that's called grasp the swallow's tail. Grasp the swallow's tail.
That's harder what to say than it is to that? Do, probably, right?
Yeah. So believe it or not, it's five different techniques, right. Actually. It's five different movements turned into one. It's a series of movements. It's a combination, actually.
Right, right.
So if I were to tell the story of Grasp Swallow's Tail, then it's I have a bird cage in my hands. One hand's on the bottom of the bird cage. One is on top of the bird cage. And I open the door with one of the hands to let the swallow fly up and away. Then you can see, okay, well, the hand that was on the bottom of the bird cage will have to come up because the hand that's on top of the bird cage is holding it. Okay. So I know that my bottom hand has to come up. Okay. That opens the bird cage. Oh, okay. In the story, the swallow flies back. So we turn over our hands and we pull our hands back as if a bird was coming back and landing in your other hand. Okay. So that's where the swallow grabs the tail. So I grab his tail because the swallow has a big long tail and it's sitting on my wrist. Okay, so I use my other hand to press against my wrist to grasp his tail so he doesn't fly away from me the second time. Okay. Now I try to get him to go, so I actually start to move my hands forward. Okay, now the next technique in that is to actually pull the hands apart again so that you can start to let him go again. So the whole idea of Grass Swallow's Tail is told in these techniques and movements and being able to push away a bird. But it's just called Grass Swallow's Tail, but there's like five different techniques in it. Mm-hmm. So whenever you are teaching and you can teach by example, by that I mean one, you know how to do it, and two, you give an example of how to use it becomes much easier to actually do, and much easier for a student to practice and understand on their own.
I sometimes think I'm a little annoying to my students in the amount of times that I'll come up with like an analogy or an example or some metaphor for what we're doing. Sure. But I'm constantly trying to like read the room and relate it to different people that are in the room. Like if I know I have a soccer player in the room, I might have an idea of how this might relate to a soccer concept. I might bring that up. Or I know if 10 of the kids in the room play in the band at school, then I can make a music reference to quarter notes or something versus eighth notes, and they'll pick right. But you got to try all these different things, and like you said, finding sometimes the one that reaches the broadest audience, if that's what you need to do in that moment, because sometimes you are trying to reach a narrow audience. But if you're trying to reach a broader audience, that sometimes becomes really difficult to not lose them. Like you said, you don't want to get too niche with your examples, but also you said something else, like the overall concept, the overall feeling or intention of what you're trying to do. And with sabers in particular, I think the fact that blade is so ubiquitous, if you will, like from form 1 to form 7, the actual weapon itself changes very little. You might change, like you mentioned, the hilt length or the blade length or the number of weapons you're using, but it's really the same thing from form 1 through form 7. No matter who you are, you can really only do the things that that one type of weapon can do. And that's kind of a benefit and a detriment. It's a detriment in the fact that, you know, it's not a real weapon. It doesn't actually exist in real life. But it's a benefit in the sense that, like you said, when you become proficient, like if this is your first martial art or your primary martial art, and you become proficient enough in, let's just say, your version of form one or your basics form, or you know, you get to that intermediate level, then you go pick up a longsword. Just because you can swing the quote-unquote flat of a lightsaber against something and cut it doesn't mean that you're not going to understand that you can't swing the flat of a longsword at something and cut it. But you might understand that swinging the flat of the longsword will parry or deflect or manipulate the opponent's weapon. So, like you said, you're going to understand that these motions still have merit when you do them. You might just have to adjust the intention or adjust the concept that you're practicing with the same motion. So I think the lightsaber is kind of like, I know personally, it made all the other weapons a lot easier to understand for me. And it took me a long time to actually tell some of my teachers, like, I practiced this with a lightsaber first, just so you know, like. I didn't use the katana first. I didn't use the nunchucks right. first. I practiced it with a lightsaber first, or a short lightsaber. I practiced it, blah, blah, you know, because it's such an easy lens. Like this, no matter which way you turn it, it's going to do what you want it to do. So then when you have to focus in on a harder, like two edges or one edge, or, you know, just a totally different weapon, it's sort of like taking the training wheels off. So you do have to work a little harder to hone things, but you've done it all before. You've done the motions before. I don't know if I'm making sense, but in my head I am.
You are making sense. It's a matter of just actually, how is the best way to put it?
We talked about this before. If you set a stone under moving water for 36 months, then even if you take the water away, there'll always be a groove in the stone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So whenever we talk about, you know, practice and being able to do any of this stuff, a lot of what we're actually talking about, or at least what I'm talking about, is trying to get people to become that bit of stone, right? You want to practice and have enough wherewithal and focus to just do it for 3 years. If you did anything for 3 years, you're probably going to be pretty decent at it.
You're going to have a groove, so to speak. You're going to have a little imprint, a little bit of that ingrained in your body.
Exactly. That's
for sure.
That's kind of where it starts. So depending on, you know, who you are and where you are in the nation and, what schools are near you, whether it be for, whether you're actually learning, martial arts or lightsaber or a combination of both, or, you know, anything, any skill really, I mean, you could apply this to, you know, framing a house. You're gonna be pretty good at it if you just keep at it.
Yeah.
Right. And you're, or at least gonna be better than you were the first day, hopefully. So whenever somebody tells me that they can't do it, or they don't know why they suck at something, I'm like, well, yeah, that's how it starts.
Yeah.
And then you get better. you start off sucking and then you get better. That's just how it goes. And if you don't get better, that means you just haven't practiced.
Yeah.
And you know how you practice? One move at a time.
That's exactly
right. One step at a time.
My mom has been a piano teacher for, I want to say, almost 50 years. And she famously, or infamously, in my family at least, we're all musicians. And so... we all had different, you see this in martial arts, in all sports too, but like I was the one that didn't really have to practice very much. My brother had to practice all the time, but he was so good.
Sure.
But like naturally not as inclined to just pick up a piece of music and go for it, right? So I would go and play in the band and stuff and with him, and we'd do our solos and stuff, and he'd be at his instrument for like 3 hours a night sometimes, hacking through these measures. And I'd be like, Mom, why does he do it? So like so much practice? It's like, I can play it. And she's like, he knows how to practice. You don't know how to practice. She's like, most people don't know how to practice. As a matter of fact, I would say almost no people know how to practice. And this was her way of saying, just because you can do it doesn't mean you'll always, or like, you know, doesn't mean you can't basically grease that groove that you're forming by putting that stone in that running water. Like, okay, you can play it, but one day he's going to be better than you. And it didn't take very long at all. Like, he practiced his ass off and he was better than me. And he had to still practice to be better than me, but he was better than me. And to this day, he's way better than me now. Like, way better than me, because he still practices. And I am lucky to take my instrument out once a month. So, but the reverse is true with martial arts. I mean, he got his black belt with me, his first black belt he got with me, and he hasn't done martial arts in 20 years. Now, I bet you if he went into the dojo, he'd be able to do all his motions within a few classes, he'd feel pretty comfortable again. But that's just because the groove is there. It has not been greased in a long time. It has not been worn in a long time. It has not had any material removed from it in a long time to make that groove more defined. So it's just, you know, everybody, this is kind of a lens for everybody to look through, like things that you like to do, or things that maybe you've never tried, but you want to do. Like, learning how to practice is important. And like you said, starting one move at a time, but also like kind of giving yourself little hurdles to overcome in your practice. When I spar on Wednesday nights in MMA, one thing I hate doing is wrestling. So what do I do? Every week I try at least one takedown. At least one time I put myself in a position to wrestle. And it sucks. I hate it. Every time I do it, I'm like, why did I do this again? But I did it because I have to give myself a hurdle to make my practice worthwhile, to make my practice more interesting. Because if I'm just practicing jab, cross, and a front kick, you know, in my sparring, like, I've been doing that for 32 years. It's just not enough anymore. I'm going to get better at it, but I'm not going to feel any progression. You need to feel progression. It's a personal thing. You just need to feel like you did better than you did the last time. And so, yes, practicing the same stuff you've been doing for 32 years is important, but also put yourself, just like, give yourself a little challenge once in a while. Okay, I've got 3 minutes of shicho. I'm going to practice all my shicho velocities for 3 minutes. But the next 3 minutes, I'm going to do it with my eyes closed. Oh, okay. That's like a simple thing you can do, but I guarantee it's going to screw you up. And then once you overcome that screw up, next time you do it, it'll be like, oh man, so good to open my eyes again. Look how dope I look when my eyes are open. Like, you're just going to pay attention to those little things. You're going to grease that groove. And then for me, that translates into, okay, I'm really good at shicho, or I'm really good at, you know, I'm winning a bunch of tournament matches just with the simple basics. I want to do more. I want to be exciting. I want to feel exciting when I fight now. Remember, we're holding toys. We're holding science fiction toys when we do this, and we treat it so seriously, but it's important to go back and have fun. So like, why not try some spinning shit? Right? Why not try some flippy dippy, do a cartwheel or something? Like, just have fun once in a while. And do it seriously, though. Like, okay, I want to try and get a point from a spinning strike. Just, why not?
Right.
Why not? If you're already at the point where you know how to do a spinning strike, do it. Like, just have fun. You know, if you're not in danger of getting knocked out or losing money over the situation, like, what do you have to lose? You got to give yourself these little hurdles to overcome and just have fun with it. You know, try the takedown, so to speak, this metaphorically speaking. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about how you might practice some of this. Like, let me give you my example first. One way I really like to get into a flow state, whether it's with empty hands or with a weapon like a lightsaber or whatever, is basically starting with my form one and going progressing through what I would call my form seven. And what I mean by that is starting with one strike at a time, maybe in the mirror, maybe just with the lights off, with some music going or whatever, just one strike at a time, go through my 12 strikes or whatever, go through into form two, do the same thing. And then what I'll do is I'll go back into start over again, and I'll just go through kind of like what I was saying. If I cut downward this way, the next cut's going to be with the back of the blade. Then the next cut's going to be with the side of the blade. Then the next cut's going to be with the front again, just to give myself another little, like one, just change one thing to make it more difficult. Then the next time I go back to form one, I might do random order, try to still get all 10 or 12 of my strikes, but in a totally random order. Instead of 1 through 10, it might be 10, 3, 6, whatever, yada, yada. So for me, that's kind of what I like to do when I'm practicing alone, is to give myself like a progression like that. With empty hands, it might be I'll start out with straight punches. Then I'll go to straight punches and straight kicks. Then I'll go to round punches, straight kick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I just kind of add one thing in. There's lots of different ways you can break that down. That's kind of an example. What might you do? What's something you might do while you're practicing alone?
Well, let's address something really quick. The difference between talent and skill.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
So basically, the best way to look at it is talent is like an ability that's gifted, something that is natural, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Whereas skill is
learned and developed,
an ability which you put your time, yeah. effort, and energy to develop. You're absolutely right. So if you take hours and hours on whatever craft you're thinking about, that is skill. But it usually, talent is the spark that creates the skill. But talent is nothing without dedication and discipline,
mm-hmm.
right? If you have a persistent and consistent, I mean, that in itself is a skill,
yeah.
that you actually have to develop, is consistency. You have to develop persistence. And basically, as you are doing anything, whether it's swinging a saber, punching, kicking, whatever it is, you know, there is the only thing that cuts through any sort of, you know, distraction or delusion is the skill.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, if you are talented in something, chances are you picked up something and was really good at it. But like your example between in music, mm-hmm. right? The person that actually worked on it becomes more persistent and becomes
more
better
skillful.
At doing more things. Yes, and is able to do more things with it,
yeah,
rather than just picking it up.
I agree with you.
If you're looking at any of that stuff, you know, because whenever you have a work ethic, a mindset that allows you to keep on getting better, that in itself is something you can work on. That mindset is a skill that's brought upon by talent. So
yeah,
it's kind of like, skill is stoking the fire, but talent is the spark, starts the
yeah,
fire. in my mind. So if I'm doing, for example, to address your question, if I'm trying to get better at, let's say, striking and blocking, we have to go back to the beginning, strip everything away, and go back to our form one.
Yeah.
We have to go back and go, okay, what am I actually trying to do? How, what angle does this work best at?
Right.
And okay, block number one. Okay, block number two.
Right.
Okay, block number three, block number four, and so on. Okay, now if I had this, can I go from block one to strike one? Block one to strike two? Block one to strike
right,
three? Over
right.
And over again, you can kind
start
of see,
sort
okay,
of layering the progress that way.
Absolutely. So
very small
now,
layers at a time.
Yeah, so now you have something to go for. And then you'll inadvertently, and I've done this many times with Chinese martial arts, you go, oh, I'm just doing that same movement from this other form.
Right.
Oh, okay. So this is how it, either this person figured out that this movement works like this, or maybe I'm doing something wrong because it's not working as well as it should. Okay. Mm. Can I turn my hand? Can I move my body? Is there a way for me to figure out where this comes in? And that's when a teacher or, you know, somebody that
a coach,
that
even just a friend who's
outside
there,
outside observer.
Yeah. Outside. Exactly. Yeah. That's a good way to say it.
Because like even a camera, if you
yes.
have the ability to just set up a camera and just practice, you can, and people hate this, watch yourself on camera
yep.
and see what you can do to improve.
I stopped hating it. I forced myself to do it
good.
So many times that I stopped hitting. Now I'm just neutral about it. It's just, I'm just me when yeah. I see myself on a camera. Yeah. It's like just watching a TV show. It's mm-hmm. me, but it's not me, if that makes sense. Like I sure. disassociate myself from the person
just
on the screen. So I've become good at
student.
But
right.
man, did I hate it? And everybody hates it.
Mm-hmm.
Until you do
everybody
it.
Everybody hates
just,
it at first.
It's when
yeah,
you start
you,
to enjoy
again,
it that maybe you want to look in the mirror a little bit.
Yeah, right. That's a skill, right? So it's, yeah. it's something to be, to just understand and know that if you are trying to get better at something, you are going to have somebody watch you do it.
Yep, yep.
And if you don't have anybody that...
Then you're going to have to watch yourself.
Yes. So it's one of those deals where if you can, I mean, every professional sport watches film, right? To get
oh,
better
yes.
at the next.
Oh, yes. Including martial artists.
Including martial artists. And I mean, this is why one of the best things before we had, you know, walls with giant mirrors, mm-hmm. only palaces had those. Right. So you had
yeah.
to be rich in order to see how good or bad you
yeah.
looked,
yep.
you know, or you would have to take your teacher's word for it.
Exactly.
Fellow students, I guess.
Yeah.
So if you want to get good at martial arts, if you want to get good, and we just keep on saying it, experience is the best teacher, but you have to put in the time.
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually show up and go, check this out.
This is
what I have, and this is the timestamp I had it at.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? In a year, if you keep working at it, you're probably going to be better than that person.
I think we don't like watching ourselves a lot of the time. And I say we because even though I've gotten used to it, I still don't like it. It's not like something I don't sit down and go, let me just watch home movies of myself doing stuff. Like, no. Like, I don't want to, but I've just gotten numb to it. And I think the reason we don't enjoy it a lot of the time is because our reasonable brain, our rational brain takes over and thinks to itself, like, that was wrong. That was incorrect. And we know the correct way it should look or be. And we know that we did something wrong. And when we can't forgive ourselves for it. When in reality, like if you don't forgive yourself for the mistake, you're not going to ever fix the mistake. You're just going to dwell on that nonsense right. for a long time. And that's kind of my mom's point with the telling people they didn't know how to practice. What she would say is like, people will practice the parts they know, or they'll play the song from beginning to end, and that they'll call that practicing. Like we say, people go in and spar, and they'll call that training. That's you are doing a form or a part of training or a part of practicing, but you're not doing the full thing. The person who goes back to the two bars in that piece of music, the two measures that they're fumbling over, and plays those two measures 10 times in a row without one mistake, and if they make a mistake, they go back to time one and try it again. Like, that's the person who understands how to practice. Then they add the first bar before it and the bar after it, and they practice only those four bars 10 times in a row without a mistake. And then they add two more on either. You know what I'm saying? That is that is somebody who understands how to practice, how to make the most of a mistake. Making the most of a mistake is how you get good at things. And that sounds like a fortune cookie. We say, like, people say that to you, your coaches say, your teachers, it's okay, you learn from your mistakes. But like, you actually have to believe it and do it. And martial arts is a really good teacher for that, because mistakes hurt. Mistakes mean you get punched in the face, or you get hit in the arm with a polycarbonate blade, or whatever the case is. And, you know, pain is a pretty decent teacher for a lot of people. Some people relish that pain. I'm not one of those guys. And if that's the type of person you are, I actually recommend maybe you don't get into fighting, because you're going to get CTE. But if you are the type of person that can learn from mistakes and be okay with mistakes. I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. I am every day learning how to be okay with mistakes. My mistakes, their mistakes. Like, that is being a dad, is coping with mistakes all day long, every day. And I think I've gotten pretty good at the dad thing by trying to figure out how to get over those hurdles. And anyway, we're, you know.
Well, on the note of,
yeah, go for it.
You know, being able to watch yourself and you know, get better at it.
That's how I started this whole rant. Yeah, go back to it. Thank you.
Remember that if you don't feel any different, then you feel indifferent.
Ooh.
Which means that you are not able to see your progress in certain ways, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, I have learned how to become a samurai in 5 minutes, right? My teacher yelled at me in Japanese for about 5 minutes, you know, and he grunted and he put my sword in different positions, and then he said, go. And we fought. That was it. That was my lesson. I had a 5-minute lesson on how to sword fight. And then we fought. And then, you know, for the past almost 20 years now, he does the same thing. He grunts at me for about 5 minutes, and then we fight. And then the only difference is that he tends to nod whenever I hit him now. So, and the difference is I can hit him now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That there are so many different things to be able to do, and so many ways to hold a sword, and so many ways to accept a sword strike coming in and have to retaliate, parry, riposte, play, you know. But there's impossibility of getting just so good that you don't have to practice anymore. Right.
It's not a thing. Erase it from your mind.
Yeah. The best athletes on the planet still go to practice. They still work on their basics. They still work on it because that's the difference between, you know, the indifferent and the person that's constantly working to get better, even if it's just an inch further than before, you know, just a micrometer more of a range because you're a little bit faster. That's the difference. There's not a single person that's a master of their craft that didn't work on it. They're not really, they're not just, you know, sitting there waiting for the phone to ring for their next project. They are, you know, hustling every day, developing their skills, and refining their skills, and use those skills to accomplish whatever goal that might be. Now, if it's hitting somebody with a polycarbonate blade, awesome. You know, if it's hitting somebody with a Chennai, or, you know, even, you know, shaving a hundredth of a second off of a turn in, you know, in a race.
Sure.
You know, those things matter.
Yeah.
You know, every Olympic athlete I know is constantly in the gym. Just there, mm-hmm. even when they don't want to be.
Yep.
They're just there, you know, just
yep.
trying to see, okay, maybe if I do this a little bit differently, I can get a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Or if I stretch a little bit more today, maybe I can build a little bit more.
Well, and being okay. surrounded so, and steeped in the culture of whatever you're pursuing, like you said, sometimes they're just there. They're not even like doing anything. They're just, but they are doing so in their mind. They're watching. They're, and I know you know this. I know this is what you mean. Mm-hmm. But that's what they're doing. They're getting better because they're steeping oh, themselves sure. in the culture of it, and like. If right. you want to get good, you have to develop your eye just as much as your own physical, you know, attributes and skills and things. You have to develop the eye for things too, and watching others, being around others, asking questions, of course, but, you know, watching good, watching bad versions of the things you're doing, and understanding
sure.
the difference. Because then when you look in the mirror, or when you watch the video of yourself or whatever, some your coach says something, you'd be like, oh, you kind of, instead of not having a lens through which to understand what they're talking about, you start to see the way things should look, should feel. You start to go, okay, that's clearly not what I did, or that clearly is what I did. I should keep doing it that way, you know? I pride myself in having like an eye for martial arts, in that I might not have trained a particular martial art before, but I can generally look at what a couple people are doing and go, okay, that's correct, or that person is more skillful or more talented or whatever the case is. I can generally tell those little nuances, but I've been doing this a long time. I've been watching a lot. I watch way more fighting and martial arts than anybody really should. I spend way more time watching that crap than anybody really should. But because of that, when I watch myself, I know every little mistake I make. And it does drive me a little insane, but I can also look at it and go, okay, I can fix that. I can fix that. I can fix, because I know what it should look like. And I think that that's an easy thing. It doesn't take a black belt to develop an eye. A lot of times, like, your best fight commentators and people like that, sports commentators, never played the sport professionally. Maybe played it, right. you know, some of them do, but a lot of them don't. I think UFC, John Anik is mm-hmm. is the head commentator for the UFC. He never did MMA, and he understands the sport very well. He watches it like crazy. He's made himself a fan. And because of that, he can at least talk about what he's seeing in front of him without necessarily all the technical mumbo jumbo, reaching a wider audience, explaining it to a wider audience in terms they understand. And because of that, everybody gets better.
Right.
So it's the same thing with, you know, somebody on the football commentary on Sunday afternoon or whatever. Maybe they didn't play college football, but having watched it for so long, that's the reason they're at that job. You know what I mean? So I think I think that's an underrated part of practicing. We don't even really think of it as practicing, but watching other people practice is practicing.
Right. And absorbing that.
Like yeah, that yeah, it can't just be a passive watch. It has to be an active right? observation.
Right, but that's a very good way to think of it, right? I mean, we're talking about martial arts, so we're going to invoke the holy Bruce Lee, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to absorb it. Absorb what is useful, discard what's not. You know, that's one of the tenets of Jeet Kune Do, right? Yeah. So if you're actually doing martial arts, if you're doing lightsaber training, if you have any success, it's embracing what you can do now.
Yeah.
And working on it until you do better than you can do now. Mm. You know, let me put this out there. Whatever you're doing that's not changing, whatever it is, you chose it.
Hmm.
Right? You've heard me say this before, but I'll say it again. If you fight for your limitations, your reward is you get to keep them.
Mm-hmm. It's like that's like a lot of food for thought. A lot of people, myself included, like we don't like to even acknowledge our limitations at all because that it's limiting, like for lack of a better yeah. word, it's limiting to your self-esteem in many ways.
Sure.
But it's just like learning to watch yourself. Like you have to become numb to the, nobody's perfect.
Right. But also remember that, you know, you're not in this world to live up to my expectations.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
You have your,
yes,
you have yourself to do that. And everybody is their own worst critic. Right.
Yeah.
So, if I live trying to meet somebody else's expectations, then, you know, most times I'm actually exceeding them.
Mm.
So
yeah, that's true.
Because I try to under promise and over deliver.
Yeah.
And that's just something that is a skill that I've tried to do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that's something that you can put towards your training. Again, most of this is a mindset.
Yeah,
mainly
I agree.
Because it will get hard. That's just the nature of it. It will get hard. It'll be one of those things. Oh yeah, I used to swing a lightsaber in the park. Yeah, and what made you stop? You obviously had a passion for it because you did it. You did it out in public, even.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm going through a little bit of that myself right now because I have nobody to like fight lightsabers with. Like nobody.
Sure.
I can train martial arts all I want, but nobody mm-hmm. even thinks about it around here.
Yeah.
And so for me, trying to steep myself in it has become rather difficult. But
right.
Man, I've been watching a lot of Star Wars lately. And it's like just watching lightsabers on the screen in front of me. Like
mm-hmm.
watching martial arts movies. I've been watching a lot of martial arts movies lately just to get my brain and my body to have fun with it again. And kind of like what's the word? Remember maybe why I cared in the first place. But also if I don't have somebody to practice with, I got to steep myself in it somehow, you know? I gotta somehow right. get that. And lately for me, it's been, I'm hella judgy about like since Disney took over Star Wars, like the fighting, the lightsaber choreography and things so hot and cold with me. Like I think the sequel trilogy has some of the worst lightsaber fighting ever. However, like the Ahsoka series had pretty decent lightsaber fighting. So like, for me, I've been going yeah. through all these little clips of lightsaber fighting and Jedi Survivor, the video game, and all the styles, and just like just nerding out in my brain about like, ooh, this is good, this is bad. I would do this, and that to me is getting me in that to that position where now I go to the other room, I pick up the lightsaber hilt, and I start actually practicing, you know. So yeah, even the people like myself who talk a good game about being so interested in practicing, all like, hey man, we lose our motivation too, and we have to find new ways to spark our interest all the time. I like to think of myself as a one percenter, and I don't mean like a murderous motorcycle gang member. Sorry if we have any of those who listen. Thank you for subscribing. We still appreciate you. But I'm not talking about being a Sons of Anarchy member here. I'm talking about like in martial arts and in any sport, like really 1% get like to basically like black belt level in that skill, right? 1% of the people who would start and spend, you know, that 4 or 5 year period, the amount of them that you get during that 5 year period, about 1% of them will get to black belt. So then 1% of those black belts will train beyond that. It's like, so I like to think of myself as a one percenter. There's like nothing you can do to keep me out of a martial arts studio. Like I will find one, I will sniff it out, and I will visit there at least once a month if that's all I can do, just to get into it, right? And you don't have to be a one percenter, but when you do the activity, whether it be saber fighting or, you know, music, or even just like coding your own computer programs and stuff, when you go do that activity you're passionate about, try to be a one percenter for that, just for that amount of time that you're doing it, you know? Like, think of yourself as being so hyper interested in this activity, having so much fun with it, that 99% of other people don't enjoy it as much as you. 99% of other people don't care as much as you. Might not be true, but for the 20 minutes a day that you did it, the 5 minutes a day you did it, you were a one percenter. And that, to me, that's like a powerful way to kind of take charge of your practice, take charge of your learning a new skill or whatever it is.
Well, let's leave it on this.
Yeah.
Passion, whatever it may show up as, right, is basically surrounding yourself with that passion 51% of the time is my definition for it. Like, if you spend half your time thinking about it, doing it, living it, watching it, hearing about it, then you are passionate in whatever that thing is.
I would agree with that.
You know, so it reminds me of something that my teacher says about as any sort of interest, right? Interest, or in this case, let's use the word passion. Passion is like fire, right? It starts with a spark, becomes a flame, becomes very hot and fierce, but, you know, it's still light and flickering, and eventually, if you do the work, you know, the passion actually becomes more mature. It's controlled. It's it can become like coals, you know, deep burning but unquenchable. They're still there. That's what it would be. Like, all interests go in that kind of cycle.
I'm so glad you used that example.
At any moment, you can just add more fuel, and that fire comes back. You know, that's passion.
You got the starbecue passion coming back to me. Oh. You're talking about note, all these
please fire. Send me some rub now. I'm like,
oh yeah, that's right. I forgot. Oh, I just made up some sausage seasoning. Anyway, I'm so glad you used this example. It's 100% true. Anybody who doesn't know, I'm really into cooking, but barbecue specifically is like just a passion of mine that I've developed over the last few years. And the whole reason I got into podcasting in the first place, besides Star Wars, was also barbecue. I used to have a podcast called Starbecue Podcast. Anyway, that might be back in the future, especially now with all this fire you're lighting under me. But you're 100% correct. The ultimate way to cook on a barbecue is to get a raging fire going to the point where it burns your sticks, your logs down to coals, and then to be able to spread those coals out evenly in the heating box, the fire box, so that the meat in the separate area gets a nice even flow of that heat, and the heat will stay pretty constant, slowly cooling off slow over time. However, as soon as you add a dry log to that bed of coals, I mean, it goes up like a church fire, like an old wooden church, just boom. I don't know. I'm sorry for anybody who's religious and listening. I didn't use a church for any particular reason. It's just the first old wooden building that came to my mind. But it's just that it's the same thing in a bar. Like you want that nice, intense, because it looks like nothing's happening in those coals. They're turning white and black. There's this tiny little orange dimness in the middle there. You give it just a little breath, a little, and a little bit of a log on top, and I'm telling you, right away, you're cooking with fire again. And that is a really poignant way to explain passion in any form. I just appreciate it because of the barbecue reference, but you're dead on in all regards. So yeah, let's leave it at that. It was a bit of a roundabout conversation tonight, but I thought it was fun, and I hope everybody listening got a little something out of it. A little confused maybe, but a little something out of it. So you guys, thank you for listening. Please, please, if you're on YouTube, we would love it if you would hit the subscribe button. If you are on any podcatcher app, please do the same. Hit the subscribe button and get the Saber Martial Arts podcast delivered to your device every time we put one up. If you're on,
also yeah, leave us a 5-star review.
That's what
you don't even have to do it on our podcast.
That's exactly
leave a 5-star review on somebody else's podcast and mention them.
Yeah,
they won't delete it.
We do have one 5-star review on Spotify. I just saw that today. Very awesome. Nice. Also, if you're on YouTube, please, you know, I know you might not want it to affect your news feed or your algorithms on your phone or whatever, but if you don't mind hitting that thumbs up button, we really appreciate it. And it'll just give us the opportunity.
If you've listened this far, you are already on the algorithm.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It ain't going to hurt you now to hit that thumbs up button or leave a little comment. Hey, thanks guys for wasting my hour and a half. Appreciate it. See you next week. You know,
this party's over.
Yeah. So bring with that, saber. Bring your own saber.